Harry Scott, sworn in for the state, 11th to testify. I am superintendent of the local branch of the Pinkerton Detective Agency. I have worked on this case with John Black, city detective. I was employed by Mr. Frank, representing the National Pencil Company. I saw Mr. Frank Monday afternoon, April 28th, at the pencil factory. We went into Mr. Frank's private office. Mr. Darley and a third party were with us. Mr. Frank said, "I guess you read in the newspapers about the horrible crime that was committed in this factory, and the directors of this company and myself have had a conference and thought that the public should demand that we have an investigation made and endeavor to determine who is responsible for this murder." And Mr. Frank then said he had just come from police barracks and that Detective Black seemed to suspect him of the crime, and he then related to me his movements on Saturday, April 26th, in detail. He stated that he arrived at the factory at 8 a.m., that he left the factory between 9:30 and 10 with Mr. Darley for Montag Brothers for the mail, that he remained at Montag Brothers for about an hour, that he returned to the factory at about 11 o'clock, and just before 12 o'clock, Mrs. White, the wife of Arthur White, who was working on the top floor of the building that day with Harry Denham, came in and asked permission to go upstairs and see her husband. Mr. Frank granted her permission to do so. He then stated that Mary Fagan came into the factory at 12:10 p.m. to draw her pay, that she had been laid off the Monday previous and she was paid $1.20, that he paid her off in his inside office where he was at his desk, and when she left his office and went in the outer office, she had reached the outer office door, leading into the hall, and turned around to Mr. Frank and asked if the medal had come yet. Mr. Frank replied that he didn't know, and that Mary Fagan then, he thought, reached the stairway, and he heard voices, but he could not distinguish whether they were men or girls talking. That about 12:50, he went up to the fourth floor and asked White and Denham when they would finish up their work, and they replied they wouldn't finish up for a couple of hours. That Mrs. White was up there at the time, and Frank informed Mrs. White that he was going to lock up the factory, that she had better leave. Mrs. White preceded Mr. Frank down the stairway and went on out of the factory as far as he knew. But on the way out, Mrs. White made the statement that she had seen a Negro on the street floor of the building behind some boxes, and Mr. Frank stated that at 1:10 p.m. he left the factory for home to go to luncheon. He arrived at the factory again at 3 p.m., went to work on some financial work, and at about 4 o'clock the night watchman reported for work, as per Mr. Frank's instructions the previous day, that he allowed Newt Lee to go out and have a good time for a couple of hours and report again at 6 o'clock, which Newt did, and at 6 o'clock when Lee returned to the factory, he asked Mr. Frank, as he usually did, if everything was all right, and Mr. Frank replied yes, and Lee went on about his business. Mr. Frank left the factory at 6:04 p.m., and when he reached the street door entrance, he found Lee talking to Gant, an ex-bookkeeper who Frank had discharged for thieving. Mr. Frank stated that he had arrived home at about 6:25 p.m., and knowing that he had discharged Gant, he tried to get Lee on the telephone at about 6:30, knowing that Lee would be in the vicinity of the time clock at that time and could hear the telephone ring, that he did not succeed in getting him at 6:30, but that he got him at 7, that he asked Lee the question if Gant had left the factory and if everything was all right, to which Lee replied yes, and he hung up the receiver. Mr. Frank stated he went to bed somewhere around 9:30. After that, Mr. Frank and Mr. Darley accompanied me around the factory and showed me what the police had found, Mr. Darley being the spokesman. We went first to the medal room on the second floor, where I was shown some spots supposed to be blood spots. They were already chipped up, and I was taken to a machine where some strands of hair were supposed to have been found. From there, we went down and examined the time clock and went through the scuttle hole and down the ladder into the basement, where I was shown where everything had been found. As to Mr. Frank's manner and deportment at the time we were in his office, he seemed to be perfectly natural. I saw no signs of nervousness. Occasionally, between words, he seemed to take a deep breath and deep sighs about 4 or 5 times. His eyes were very large and piercing. They looked about the same they do now. He was a little pale. He gave his narrative rather rapidly. As to whether he stated any fixed definite time as to hours or minutes, he didn't state any definite time as to when Mary Fagan came in. He said she came in at about 12:10. We furnished attorneys for Frank with reports. After refreshing my memory, I now state that Mr. Frank informed me at the time I had that conversation with him that he heard these voices before 12 o'clock, before Mary Fagan came. He also stated during our conversation that Gant knew Mary Fagan very well, that he was familiar and intimate with her. He seemed to lay special stress on it at the time. He said that Gant paid a good deal of attention to her. As to whether anything was said by any attorney of Frank's as to our suppressing any evidence as to this murder, it was the first week in May when Mr. Pierce and I went to Mr. Herbert J. Haas's office in the 4th National Bank building and had a conference with him as to the Pinkerton Agency's position in the matter. Mr. Haas stated that he would rather we would submit our reports to him first before we turned it over to the police and let them know what evidence we had gathered. We told him we would withdraw before we would adopt any practice of that sort, that it was our intention to work in hearty cooperation with the police. I saw the place near the girls' dressing room on the office floor. Fresh chips had already been cut out of the floor, and I saw white smeared where the chips had been cut out, and there were also some dark spots near the chipped-out places. It was just as though somebody had taken a cloth and rubbed some white substance around in a circle, about 8 inches in diameter. This white stuff covered all of the dark spots. I didn't note any unusual signs of nervousness about Frank in his office. There wasn't any trembling or anything of that sort at that time. He was not composed. On Tuesday night, April 29th, Black, Mr. Frank, and myself were together, and Mr. Black told Mr. Frank that he believed Newt Lee was not telling all that he knew. I also said to Mr. Frank that Newt knew more than he was telling, and that as he was his employer, I thought he could get more out of the nigger than we could, and I asked him if he would consent to go into a room as employer and employee and try to get it out of him. Mr. Frank readily consented, and we put them in a private room. They were together there for about 10 minutes alone. When about 10 minutes was up, Mr. Black and I entered the room, and Lee hadn't finished his conversation with Frank and was saying, "Mr. Frank, it is awful hard for me to remain handcuffed to this chair." And Frank hung his head the entire time the Negro was talking to him, and finally, in about 30 seconds, he said, "Well, they have got me, too." After that, we asked Mr. Frank if he had gotten anything out of the Negro, and he said, "No, Lee still sticks to his original story." Mr. Frank was extremely nervous at that time. He was very squirmy in his chair, crossing one leg after the other and didn't know where to put his hands. He was moving them up and down his face, and he hung his head a great deal of the time while the Negro was talking to him. He breathed very heavily and took deep swallows, and sighed and hesitated somewhat. His eyes were about the same as they are now. That interview between Lee and Frank took place shortly after midnight Wednesday, April 30th. On Monday afternoon, Frank said to me that the first punch on Newt Lee's slip was 6:33 p.m., and his last punch was 3 a.m. Sunday. He didn't say anything at that time about there being any error in Lee's punches. Mr. Black and I took Mr. Frank into custody about 11:30 a.m. Tuesday, April 29th. His hands were quivering very much. He was very pale. On Saturday, May 3rd, I went to Frank's cell at the jail with Black, and I asked Mr. Frank if from the time he arrived at the factory from Montag Brothers up until 12:50 p.m., the time he went upstairs to the fourth floor, was he inside of his office the entire time? And he stated, yes. Then I asked him if he was inside his office every minute from 12 o'clock until 12:30, and he said, yes. I made a very thorough search of the area around the elevator and radiator and back in there. I made a surface search. I found nothing at all. I found no ribbon or purse or pay envelope or bludgeon or stick. I spent a great deal of time around the trap door, and I remember running the light around the door way right close to the elevator, looking for splotches of blood, but I found nothing. Cross-examination. Yes, I sent you this report as to what happened between Mr. Herbert J. Haas and myself. This afternoon, Supter, H.B. Pierce, and myself held a conference with Mr. Herbert Haas, at which the agency's position in the matter was discussed, and Mr. Haas stated they wanted to learn who the murderer was, regardless of who it involved. Mr. Haas told me that after I had told him we would withdraw from the case before we would not cooperate with the police. No, I did not report that to you. I reported the motive of our conference. No, I did not say anything about Mr. Haas wanting us to do anything except locate the murderer. Yes, I talked to you afterwards, and you also told me to find the murderer, even if it was Frank. Mr. Haas had said to Mr. Pierce and me that he would rather that we submit our reports of evidence to him before we turned it over to the police. No, there was nothing said about not giving this to the police. I testified at the coroner's inquest as to what conversation I had with Mr. Frank. I did not give you in my report the details of Mr. Frank's morning movements, when he left home, arrived at the factory and went to Montag Brothers's, and returned to the factory. As to my not saying one word about Gant being familiar with this little girl, that was just an oversight, that is all. No, I did not testify to that either at the coroner's inquest. I didn't put it in the report to you, because Gant was released the next day, and I didn't consider him a suspect. There was no reason for my not giving it to you. It was an oversight. I am representing the National Pencil Company, who employed me, and not Mr. Frank individually. It is true in my report to you, with reference to the interview between me and Mr. Frank, that I stated, I had no way of knowing what they said because they were both together privately in a room there and we had no way of knowing except what Lee told us afterwards. I now state that I did hear the last words of Lee. I didn't put in my notes that Gant was familiar with Mary Fagan. I don't put everything in my notes and the coroner didn't examine me about it either. No, I didn't tell the coroner anything about Frank crossing his legs and putting his hands up to his face. I never went into detail down there. No, I didn't mention his hanging his head. We always work with the police on criminal cases. No, I did not testify before the coroner about any white stuff having been smeared over those supposed blood spots. I am not sure whether I got the statement about Mary Fagan being familiar with Gant from Mr. Darley or Mr. Frank. Mr. Frank was present at the time. Mr. Frank told me when the little girl asked if the medal had come back that he said, I don't know. It may be true that I swore before the coroner that in answer to that question from Mary Fagan as to whether the medal had come yet that Frank said, no, and it is possible that I so reported to you. If I said no, I meant I don't know. I say now that Mr. Frank told me he left the factory at 1:10 p.m., If I reported to you that he told me he left at 1 o'clock, I made a very serious mistake. That is an oversight. Yes, I reported to the police before I reported to Mr. Haas or Mr. Montag. RE Direct Examination. Yes, our agency reported to the police about finding the club. I find it is in our report of May 15th. I don't know when it was reported. I was out of town. I worked all through this case with Detective Black, and every move he made was known to both of us. As to the stairway from the basement to the upper floor, there was a great deal of dust on the stairs, and the dust didn't seem to be disturbed. This stairway is not in the picture, but is near the back door. It was nailed and closed. Harry Scott, recalled for state. It took Jim Conley 2 or 3 minutes to write out the notes that I dictated to him. Cross-examination. I knew on Monday that Mrs. White claimed she saw a darkie at the pencil factory. I gave that information to the police department. Mr. Frank gave me the information when I first talked to him. I never inquired of Frank or any of the pencil factory people if Conley could write. Sunday, May 18th, I was present when Conley made his statement. May 18th. I wrote it out myself. Defendant's Exhibit 36. He made no further statement on that day. He stated that he did not go to the pencil factory at all that day. At that time, I knew he could write. He told me everything that was in that statement. The information that Conley could write came from the pencil factory on May 18th. On May 18th, I dictated to Conley these words. That long, tall, black Negro did by himself. I dictated each word singly, and I should judge it took him more than 6 or 7 minutes to write it. He writes quite slowly. When he was brought before Mrs. White to see if she could identify him, he was chewing his lips and twirling a cigarette in his fingers. He didn't seem to know how to hold on to it. He could not keep feet still. He positively denied on May 18th that he had anything to do with the murder of Mary Fagan and that he was at the factory at all. We talked very strongly to him and tried to make him give a confession. We used a little profanity and cussed him. He made that statement after he knew that I knew he could write. We had him for about 2 or 3 hours that day. He made another statement on May 24th, which was put in writing. Defendant's Exhibit 37. He was carried to Mr. Dorsey's office that day and went over the statement with Mr. Dorsey. He still denied that he had seen the little girl the day of the murder. He swore to all that the statement contains. That statement was a voluntary statement from him. He sent for Mr. Black and we went there together. We questioned him again very closely for about 3 hours on May 25th. He repeated the story that he told in his statement of May 24th. We saw him again on May 27th in Chief Lanford's office, talked to him about 5 or 6 hours. We tried to impress him with the fact that Frank would not have written those notes on Friday, that was not a reasonable story. That showed premeditation and that would not do. We pointed out to him why the first statement would not fit. We told him we wanted another statement. He declined to make another statement. He said he had told the truth. On May 28th, Chief Lanford and I grilled him for 5 or 6 hours again, endeavoring to make clear several points which were far-fetched in his statement. We pointed out to him that his statement would not do and would not fit. He then made us another long statement on May 28th, Defendant's Exhibit 38, having been told that his previous statement showed deliberation, that could not be accepted. He told us then all that appears in the statement of May 28th. He never told us anything about Mr. Frank making an engagement for him to stamp for him and for him to lock the door. He told us nothing about seeing Montine Stover. He did not tell us about seeing Mary Fagan. He said he did not see her. He didn't say he saw Lemmy Quinn. Conley was a rather dirty Negro when I first saw him. He looked pretty good when he testified here. Frank was arrested Tuesday morning at about 11:30. On May 29th, we had another talk with him. Talked with him almost all day. Yes, we pointed out things in his story that were improbable and told him he must do better than that. Anything in his story that looked to be out of place, we told him wouldn't do. After he had made his last statement, we didn't wish to make any further suggestion to him at that time. He then made his last statement on May 29th, Defendant's Exhibit 39. He told us all that appears in that statement. We tried to get him to tell about the little mesh bag. We tried pretty strong. He always denied ever having seen it. He never said that he saw it in Frank's office, or that Frank put it in his safe. We asked him about the parasol. He didn't tell us anything about it. He didn't tell us anything about Frank stumbling as he got on the street floor at the elevator and hit him. Since making this statement on May 29th, I have not communicated with Conley and have not seen him. He never told us that he came from his home straight to the factory. He denied knowing anything about the fecal matter down in the basement in the elevator shaft. He never said he went down there himself between the time he first came to the factory and went to Montag's. He never said he thought the name of the little girl was Mary Perkins. He never said anything at all about Mary Perkins. We pressed him that day as to whether he saw Mary Fagan or not. He finally told us that he saw her dead body. He never did tell us that he heard a lady scream, though we asked him about it. He said he did not hear anybody scream while he was sitting on the box. He said he didn't hear anything at all that day. He never said anything about Mr. Frank having hit her and having hit her too hard. He never said anything about somebody running on tiptoes from the metal department and back again. He said he did not hear any stamping. He did not tell us anything about Mr. Frank telling him how to lock the door. He did not tell us anything about Frank having a cord in his hand at the top of the steps, or that Frank looked funny about his eyes or that his face was red. He didn't tell us that he went back there and found the little girl with a rope around her neck and a piece of underclothing, or that he went back to Mr. Frank and told him the girl was dead, or that he wrapped her in a piece of cloth. He said it was a crocus sack. He did not say anything about Mr. Frank saying, "Shh." He didn't say that he put the sack on his shoulder and that body dangled round about his legs. He said he never saw the ribbon, didn't know where it was. We asked him whether there was any thought of burning the body, and he said not. He didn't know anything about that. He never said anything about his promising to come back and burn the body, or that he said to Mr. Frank, "You are a white man and done it, and I am not going down there and burn it myself," or that Mr. Frank had arranged to give his bond and send him away, or that Frank said he would have a place to get in by when he came back to burn the body, or said he owed a Jew 10 cents and paid it. He did not tell us of any conversation he had with Mr. Frank on Tuesday after the murder in which Mr. Frank said, "If you had come back on Saturday and done what I told you, there wouldn't have been any trouble." As to the scene between Conley and me when I undertook to convince him that I knew he could write on Sunday, May 18th, I called him up at Chief Lanford's office, gave him a paper and pencil, and told him that we understood he said he couldn't write, and now we knew he could write, and we wanted him to write what we told him. He sat there and looked at us while we were talking, and I told him to write as I dictated, and he picked up the pencil and wrote immediately. We convinced him that we knew he could write, and then he wrote. Redirect examination. I got information as to Conley writing through my operations while I was out of town. McWirth told me when I returned, I got no information personally about Conley being able to write from the pencil company people. Personally, I did not get information as to Conley's being able to write from pencil company. I got it from outside sources, wholly disconnected with the pencil company. As to whom I first communicated anything about Mrs. White's statement about seeing a Negro down there, my impression is I told it in my many conversations with Black and Chief Lanford and Bass Rosser. Don't know the day. It was shortly after April 28th. After Conley made his last statement, Chief Beavers, Lanford and I went to the jail with Conley and saw the sheriff, and he went to Frank's cell. The last time I saw Frank was Saturday, May 3rd. As to whether Mr. Frank refused to see me, only through Sheriff Mangum, as to the number of matters I told Conley didn't fit the first time, and those I told him didn't fit the last time, I could not name those. That would almost be impossible unless I had the statement clear in my head. I never suggested what to put in or what to substitute or what to change. They came from Conley himself. The state rests. Evidence for the defendant.